Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, we got through 12, okay. You know, it was kind of funny. Last night during the show, I was talking about all the stuff I don't watch on TV, so nerd that I am, naturally, I began watching the 12 concert as soon as the show was over last night. Got to give it to the Who. They brought it. I remember being skeptical of the Who when they headlined a Super Bowl a couple of years back, but Roger and Pete, after all these years, the finale set with Paul McCartney was kind of a letdown. And like a couple of folks in the Horn family, I thought that choosing Live and Let Die for the big blow-off number in a hurricane relief concert was of marginal taste. And Agnes, of course, predicted it. She's special that way. This is the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com. An internet-based broadcasting experiment going on in excess of 7 years now that is an attempt to seek conversation, discussion, and dialogue instead of rank sycophancy. Megadiddos from Busted Knuckle Rush, I just wanna groom your toe hair. That's enough about you. Let's talk about me, my friend. The Horn is available on the internet, of course. Anybody listening kind of knows that, don't you? But, well, you can get it simplest at headonradionetwork.com and the button that says Listen Live. But we also try to encourage folks who are out and about with their little old smartphones to listen via things like TuneIn Radio, where we are not exactly chopped liver, and as well as by Stitcher Internet Radio and sites like Streama.com and Dar.fm and, oh, goodness me, on Roku devices. And I think we're on the Nokia system. And goodness gracious, we're all over. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on The Horn. The Horn is a listener-driven, listener-centric, listener-supported effort. We try to raise about $150 a night to keep things going. And I'm proud to say that our buddy Dr. John has put a challenge on the table this evening of $50 that he will meet if someone else has another 50 to go with it. 5 at 10, 10 at 5, 2 at 25, 130 and 120, a 40 and a 10. Any way you care to do the math, because I'm frankly not very good at the math, and that will help us keep things going, especially in light of the fact that there will be no show tomorrow night. I'm on the road. It's going to be a bit of a hairy weekend. Seems like most of my weekends are kind of hairy these days, but that's okay. Tomorrow morning early, I head out of here for parts south and east. I head down to Knoxville, Tennessee, and that will take me away from the microphone tomorrow night. Then Saturday morning, I get up and drive back. And I really look forward to these things, and I hope you enjoy them as much as I do. I know many of you do. Then on Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can either listen on the Horn stream or you can view it at prismwv.org. A PRISM West Virginia American History chat session with Dr. Bill O'Brien and Professor Keith Lilly with their special guest, Dr. Willis Nordlund. I have a feeling this is going to be a real good one, a really good one. There will be, with Dr. Nordlund on board, there will be some talk about labor issues, and that has a little bit of relevance in the current. Yes, I think so. I know you do as well. So do please feel free to check that out, 3 p.m. Sunday on the Horn. And Dr. Bill and I are still talking about, and it will happen. It's just a matter of when both our schedules coincide enough to make it happen. Dr. Bill will be returning to the Horn airwaves probably in the new year with a program that I think you're going to find absolutely scintillating. So I'll have more details on that as it develops. But we do have a PRISM chat coming this Sunday at 3 p.m. noon Pacific. And if you've never checked out a Dr. Bill chat, you really should. Now, this is part of the PRISM West Virginia Teaching American History Project, so it is actually geared for the teachers in the program. However, Dr. Bill has graciously, and I think with a great deal of foresight and forethought, broadened the scope so that everybody can see it, hear it, ask questions about it, dialogue, discuss, and among other things, and this will be might be especially interesting to those who are hanging out in the headonradionetwork.com chat room. There is a chat room at PRISM West Virginia, PRISMWV, PRISMWV.org, and you can participate in real time. So that is it ups the ante a little bit on the conversational value. So do check it out if you have the opportunity. Labor? Did I say something about labor? Yeah. I thought you might. This is a satirical little piece, but it seems good. Something good to get us started on Thorn in the Side Thursday. It is worth noting that Clear Channel, you know, the broadcast behemoth, the blowtorch of blowtorches, Clear Channel is falling apart. And in a stroke of sublime irony, the absolutely whipped cream covered delicious kind of irony, delivered, it seems, daily lately by the goddess of irony, the only real possible deity that might possibly exist. It is a demise brought on by one of their own. Because you see, Clear Channel owns Premier Radio Networks, and Premier Radio Networks owns Flush Flembaugh, and Flush Flembaugh basically, sunk a shiv into the entire terrestrial talk radio industry in the right wing, and to a certain extent progressive as well, with his slut-shaming of Sandra Fluck. And advertisers are staying away in droves. It's worth remembering, of course, that Clear Channel is owned by the modern conservative Republican equivalent of Schleprock from last night. Schleprock! Yeah, Bishop Willard Romney's Bain Capital. Things are not good at Clear Channel. And so I offer you this. It is it's just called Christmas at Clear Channel.
Revised Scholastic Films presents The Truth Behind Christmas at Clear Channel. Yes, it's Christmas time at Clear Channel Broadcasting Incorporated. And it's the happiest time of year, where employees celebrate giving and the spirit of Christmas, while Clear Channel celebrates wonderful year-end returns and fat executive bonuses. However, some people crazily believe that large corporations don't care about their employees. With Clear Channel, this couldn't be more untrue. Look here, it seems that Clear Channel has organized a corporate secret Santa program, where each employee gets a gift from a secret corporate philanthropic specialist. Jimmy received a pink slip of paper, no doubt containing an uplifting holiday message from the company. Look at Jimmy jump up and down, screaming at the top of his lungs, probably trying to thank Clear Channel for their holiday generosity. There are always holiday festivities going on at any of the 1.75 billion Clear Channel radio stations at Christmas time. Wow, look at the happy employees cleaning out their offices, probably to make room for the tree and the upcoming Christmas feast that Clear Channel has undoubtedly organized. Does Clear Channel Broadcasting care about the Christmas spirit? You're damn right they do. Look at this formerly high-paid executive. He used to be cooped up in a dingy office every day. But now, thanks to Clear Channel, he's working as a corner Santa Claus. Wait a minute, you're supposed to wave with all of your fingers extended, Santa. And here you see another employee being escorted out of the building by security, probably so he can experience the crisp, cool weather, which will make him even more into the Christmas spirit. Apparently, this employee had asked to have Christmas Day off, so Clear Channel responded by giving him several years of vacation time. What a generous company of friends. And of course, since Clear Channel is a large corporation that makes hundreds of millions of dollars per year, they are incredibly charitable. Here they are hiring a homeless person with no broadcasting experience whatsoever to be one of their highest profile hosts. Some would say they would hire anyone or do anything just to save a buck. But this homeless junkie, soon to be talk show host, doesn't think so. Say hello to the camera, Glenn. And that's the generous truth behind a Clear Channel Christmas.
Ugly times at Clear Channel, ugly times in terrestrial broadcasting. But here, it's a different story. Why, we're just all awash in the Christmas spirit, and the holiday spirit, I should say. And best of all, we don't have to worry about none of that FCC. I don't even know where my FCC third-class official found it in the bottom of a box of Cracker Jack's license is. Used to be you had to post that thing on the wall. Now, who cares? And so that's why this little experiment in conversation radio is able to continue, if not flourish, to continue. While Clear Channel, well, they're parasites too, you know. But that's just a little teaser for the front end of Thorn in the Side Thursday. No, we've got ever so much more than that. Why, well, look here. This happened early in the day. And bless their hearts, I tweeted that Think Progress had blown the lead. Because they did. The headline says, Obama, quote, may decide to go blow up small countries, unquote, for fun, Norquist predicts. Well, that seems pretty sleazy. But it's also par for the course for Grover. But it turns out the clip that goes with it has a little nugget that is ever so much more interesting than anything about blowing up small countries for fun. A lot more interesting. I'm sure you'll figure this out pretty quick.
Got lots of things Obama claims to be for, and we, the Republicans in the House and Senate, will make him actually make those spending restraints in order to get the continuing resolution out a week, 2 weeks, a month. Obama will be on a very short leash, fiscally speaking, over the next 4 years.
Got that? Obama will be... I mean, the Think Progress folks didn't even put this in bold. Maybe it's because we speak the code that we notice this, but I said, well, damn! Obama will be on a very short leash. Really, Mars Grover? A short leash? I've spent the day thinking back, trying to remember if anybody ever talked about George W. Bush being on a leash. Or George H.W. Bush being on a leash. Or Ronald Reagan being on a leash. Or even Bill Clinton being on a leash. Or Jimmy Carter being on a leash. Or Gerald Ford being on a leash. Or Richard Nixon. Or LBJ. Or John Kennedy. Or Eisenhower. Or Roosevelt. Or Hoover. Or Coolidge. Or Harding. Or Wilson. Or Taft. Or Roosevelt. Or McKinley. And I'm fresh out of 20th century at that point. Did I mention Truman? Being on a leash. Shall we add Grand Wizard to Grover Norquist's many titles? Grover Norquist, Grand Wizard of Americans for Tax Reform. Grover Norquist, Ultimate Kliegel of Americans for Tax Reform. He's going to keep Barack Obama the President of the United States and the first one of dark skin on a leash. God only knows what he wants to do to Michelle. On a leash. But that's not all. No, hell no. That's not all. Let's go back. Let's make sure we've got us lots of that tasty context stuff. Let's get it all here.
Yeah, a very short leash, fiscally speaking, over the next 4 years. He's not going to have any fun at all. He may decide to go blow up small countries he can't pronounce because it won't be any fun to be here because he won't be able to spend the kind of cash he was hoping to.
You notice that little... Yeah, Doc, I know. Just light the cigar. You notice that little Freudian hiccup there? Even Grover knew that he had just done something that was even over the top for the Grovers of the world.
...out a week, 2 weeks, a month. Obama will be on a very short leash, fiscally speaking.
Obama will be on a very short leash, fiscally speaking. Really? Fiscally speaking, Grover? And then, you know, there's a little bit more of, Grover's just absolutely glowing in the dark with his white privilege here. He's not going to have any fun at all. He may decide to blow up small countries he can't pronounce. Small countries he can't pronounce. You mean the way George W. couldn't tell the difference between Australia and Austria? Grove? I'm sorry, that's Mars Grove. I've said all along that sooner or later, I figured it would have happened, and it almost did. It almost did. I figured it would happen before the election, and we came close when Rick Bro-Fro-Mix Santorum referred to the President of the United States as, well, we certainly know what candidate Obama was like. He was an anti-war, pro-government nig. But we're pretty much there. We're pretty well there. Wants to keep the president on a leash. Now, I kind of watched my Twitter feed all day because I caught that early on, the leash business. And I didn't see anybody else picking it up. Are we just that blind now, us glow-in-the-dark white folks? That things like on a leash just blow past? Because, I mean, that was almost automatic with me. Jesus. Next thing you know, Grover will be making appearances talking about how he needs the President of the United States to step off. And how he'd best not eyeball John Boehner. God almighty. Darlene writing in, she says, not to bash Tom again, but even Tom Hartman missed the being on a short leash code phrase today. He played the same clip. Didn't even call that out. Piedra in the chat room says, of course Mars Norquist understands that tax cutting is part of that Southern strategy. Lee Atwater said so. God, it's breathtaking. I mean, come on, don't leave it to the really pink hillbilly to be the one who notices this. Somebody pick this up and run with it, please. This is the kind of thing that could end it. I mean, this is one of those Jimmy the Greek moments, okay? The kind of this could keep anybody. Well, I don't know. It's the second decade of the 21st century, and there's no account. But in a society with anything resembling normalcy or sanity, hell of a caveat there. This would get Grover knocked off Christmas card lists. He wouldn't be going to swank Tony parties anywhere. Keep the president, the first and only African-American president ever elected, on a leash? Ron and Raleigh writing, he says, hey, Bob, what Grover said that I found interesting was his assertion that he is an elected official. He said, we in the House and Senate. Ron observes, someone needs to put this jumped-up pissant in his place just once. Someone needs to ask him, who the F does he think he is? Well, Ron, pretty obviously who he thinks he is. You know, he's Mars Kliegel Norquist. Marty says, I confess to being so weary about anything Grover says, I missed it completely. Although I'm certain Olbermann would pick up on it, but Olbermann doesn't have an outlet. Hi, Keith. Anytime, buddy. Ron also noting, Ron and Raleigh, Bob, you must remember we live in a post-racial America. That's an America you spell with three Ks, one after the other. Grover couldn't possibly have any racial animus in his statement. Nah, couldn't possibly at all, ever. No how, no way. Yeah, Klegel Norquist. Well, then again, Horst, you're probably right. HZ in the chat room. Jimmy the Greek's career would have been safe if he'd waited until the Obama era before making his remark. But see, our side may not be so... I have no doubt that Malloy heard that. Or our buddy Rick Smith. But there's probably a bunch of people on our side that missed that. One, because there aren't just a hell of a lot of us progressive redneck broadcasters out there. Two, because since there aren't, not many of them speak the code. But I guarantee you that the instant he said that on C-SPAN, and since he said it on C-SPAN, that should be enough to keep him from ever getting invited back to C-SPAN. Then again, C-SPAN being C-SPAN, they'd probably invite Lester Maddox on. If he wasn't busy being in hell, Lester. But I guarantee you that all over the South, all over Jesus land, all over the Confederacy, they was just a laughing. Oh, did you hear what? Jimmy Jeff, come over here. Let me play this for you. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Grover Norquist done said he's gonna keep the President of the United States on a leash. Man, that's a knee slapper. I bet they were playing that clip in a damn loop in the office of Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Third. Yeah, y'all play that one again. I love it when they play, when Grover talks about the president that way. I tell you what. Gonna keep that boy on leash. Jesus. Thorn in the side Thursday indeed. Ouch. So that's just another place we can. And the only reason it surprises me that nobody picked that story up is because the Republicans are all kinds of tuned in to other kinds of code. Why, they done pert near had a plum straight up hissy down in Texas about the Sharia law. A chain email went around Texas, warning people about C-scope. Here it is Thursday. I don't know. I don't see Texas Betsy in the chat room. Know anything about this C-scope, Betsy? If you're out there. It's some standards, a statewide third-party curriculum package that started being used by the Irving Independent School District in Texas. And like I said, a chain email went around. A chain email. Education policy is now being dictated by chain emails sent by grumpy people in their undershorts behind keyboards in Texas. The story I have is from the Irving blog at the Dallas News website. Avi Selk is the writer. And he provides a screenshot of the chain email that ran around in Irving. Islam in Texas schools. See, they can find Islam anywhere, but they can't hear racism in the phrase, keep the president on a very short leash. Islam in Texas schools. Why can't parents see the curriculum? Why? I don't want them to see it. I want them to read it. And the question is, why can't they read it? Why are there no textbooks? Why can't teachers disclose the content? Be sure to watch both short videos below. Many Texas public school superintendents have thrown aside textbooks and bought at great expense to the local taxpayers an unproven curriculum called C-Scope. Does your school use it? Right. Because, see, they were afraid that C-Scope was pro-Islam. The C-Scope curriculum, well, it said that the Red Cross and the Islamic Red Crescent was the same thing. Well, they kind of are. But it's worst. There's worst to it. Down there in the Irving Independent School District, these hyper-vigilant patriots, because remember, the cost of eternal vigilance is the price of freedom. These eternally vigilant teabaggers was a keeping a weather eye out for anything that said anything bad about America, because can't nobody say nothing bad about America less than it's a teabagger, because only they know. And you know what they done said that C-Scope curriculum woman said about America? Yeah. Sure enough, it said that the Boston Tea Party was a terrorist act. Sure enough, did. It didn't say that it was a patriotic act done by a bunch of people motivated by Jesus Christ, which it was. It says it's a terrorist act. Just like him Sharia law following terrorists what flood our airplanes into Biddens. That's your terrorist act. Tea Party was an act of, you know, freedom! No, really. C-Scope is administered by an organization called Region 10. Region 10, meanwhile, had already been following the chain email going around. And so, they were kind of prepared for it. And even though this was clearly a chain email generated by a bunch of teabaggers with roughly the IQ of a half-strangled weasel. The Irving Independent School District. Called for a review of C-Scope curriculum. To make sure there wasn't nothing good about no Islam, no wires in it. Because the precious little minds of Texas can't be getting pisoned with none of that there Sharia law. The director of Region 10 is Jan Moberly. And she said she hired a, quote, very socially and fiscally conservative, that practically means teabagger, former social studies teacher who, quote, watches Glenn Beck on a regular basis to go through the curriculum with a fine-tooth comb. Fine-tooth nitpicking comb. Director Moberly said, I asked her to look for anything she would consider the least bit controversial. And the report came back. And it turns out, as is so often the case with teabaggers, that the teabaggers were, come on, this is the easy part, lying! Because it turned out the report that went through the curriculum, and it's a curriculum that covers everything from kindergarten through the end of high school. Contained not a word about the Red Crescent or the Boston Tea Party as a terrorist act. Although the report said maybe it was in the past, but they don't know because they couldn't find it in the past. Maybe in the past, bats walked on two legs and monkeys flew through the sky. That kind of maybe in the past. The report also came back that the woman said if there was any Islamic bias in C-Scope, it was a bias against radical Islam. And of course, we understand that in Texas, we define radical Islam as anything Islam. If they won't eat, if they won't eat barbecued pork pig, it's radical Islam, even if it's not. But here's the funny little upshot about the C-Scope investigation. It turns out that Christianity got twice as much attention in that curriculum as any other religion, whether it be Islam, Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism, Jainism, animism, atheism, but that's not a faith. See a couple of weeks ago. There was twice as much Christianity as there was anything else. That, of course, does not bother these teabagging dillweeds who started this whole kerfuffle, because that's the way it's supposed to be. And remember, the state of Texas drives the entire textbook industry in just about the whole bloomin' country. This from Ron and Molly. Bob, could you venture a guess as to how many black men are named Beauregard? Just wondering. Mine tends to wander off into weird tangents, Ron says. We all understand at this point that my mathematical skills are not the highest skills that I possess. But I don't think this is going to call for high-level mathematical skills. Because I'm guessing it's zero, absolute zero, zero Kelvin, all kinds of none, nada, nothing. Right. Yeah. But there are some black folks what are Muslim. And those eternally vigilant, infernally stupid teabags in Texas. They're on the lookout for them. Can you, oh, Marveline, can you imagine saying that them heroes at the Boston Tea Party was terrorists? Shall we do a brief review of the Boston Tea Party? In which political dissidents dressed themselves up as Indians, snuck aboard a ship, and started heaving cases of valuables, to wit, tea, overboard in an effort to change the Crown's tax policy. Wait a minute. Wait, they were engaging in violence for political... What? Oh, dear. I don't care. It was patriotism, and it wasn't no terrorism. God said it. I believe it. That settles it. Right? Jim noting, we are approaching a constitutional crisis, not unlike Andrew Johnson was nearly impeached. Mark my words, says Jim. For word markings, we will note that this is the 13th of December, 2012, and the time in the Eastern Time Zone is roughly 6:41 p.m. Now, we're getting very close to a crisis. Wouldn't it be fun? And we all know that President Obama is a much nicer man than this. Much calmer man. Much cooler man. But I hear that he and Boehner were supposed to meet about an hour and 42 minutes ago to discuss the non-fiscal non-cliff. Oh, yes, come on. Oh, do come in, John. It's nice to see you. Can I get you a glass of Wild Irish Rose? Here, we just screwed the top off the bottle. What, you'll take the bottle? You don't? Oh, you want a straw? Well, before we get started on our fiscal negotiations, Speaker, I need you to take a message back to your pal, Grover Norquist. And he is your pal, isn't he, John? You and Grover, you're friends, you have lunch together, maybe you go play golf together a little bit. Have you ever invited him into the tanning bed, John? Well, we'll pick these discussions up, but I just want you to, because I know he's never far away from you, John. We'll let you right back in, but I need you to go out and look up Grover and tell him I don't wear leashes, and I've already seen the advanced screening of Django. Yeah, you tell him that, John. You tell him to sleep real light now and not be traveling outside the borders of these countries, because he might wind up in one of them countries I can't pronounce, and, well, I can't be responsible for what happens if some drone operator goes a little, funny in the head. And just rains a little hell fire down on his ass. Wear a leash, my ass. It is fun to fantasize about, isn't it? Don't reckon that'll happen. No, because see, John, we're not going to say another word about this, and we'll let this whole thing go over that little old cliff, that imaginary cliff everybody's got out there. We'll let the whole thing go. Unless I find out that Grover Norquist wants to come to me on bended knee and apologize for wanting to put a leash on me. Ordinarily, Speaker Boner is that sort of pumpkin-licious color of orange. But I can see a scenario such as that being significant enough to make all orange drain out of his head and just make him sort of a ghostly, pale, Casperish white. On a very... Yeah, what, yeah. So, tell me now, he said we in the Senate and the House. John, is he speaking for the Speaker now? Am I to understand that he's speaking for you? That's right here, it's just you and me. You want to get that leash on me, John? You got your whip with you, John? Yeah, I thought so. Leash. And a very short leash at that. Maybe it can be some shackles, John. Go back, ask Grover, does he want shackles, too? Do I have to shuffle, John? Going to have to learn me a new name? We're going to have to go through that, too? You might want to tell your pal Grover he best spend more time watching Django than watching watching reruns of Roots. Leashes. But that ain't all. Oh, heck no, that ain't all. Not by a long shot. But it is Friday. It's not Friday. It's Thursday, Thorn Inside Thursday. And some of these things are just, they're not national in scope, and they're just kind of random. Just another one of those little Rod Serling-esque signposts. You know, the ones that are up ahead that tell you you're headed for, yeah. This little signpost was to be found in Berlin, and I do believe you pronounce it that way, Berlin, Ohio. Problem is, there's a fellow over there that had done been charged with supplying alcohol to minors. And police say that the fellow had been charged, asked his neighbor to lie for him. And his neighbor refused. That is when... That's when Mr. Hall got bit in the face by Mr. Oates. No, really. Big dust-up between Hall and Oates. Oates done chomped right down on Hall's face. Bit him in the eye. Police said there was a significant cut to his left eyebrow region in the shape of a bite. It's a strange country we're in. Seems like it gets stranger every day. Oh, come on, you knew this was coming, right? Hall and Oates? Biting? Yeah. The Green News Report is on the way. Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. Bob Kincaid. It's Thursday, December 13, 2012.
If it would have been 5 seconds later, I think it would have been right in the middle of the fireball.
Massive natural gas pipeline explosion melts highway in West Virginia. More bad news for wolves, this time in Michigan. Plus, there they go again.
One person's stimulus is another person's wasteful spending.
House Republicans threaten to hold Hurricane Sandy disaster funds hostage.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The administration needs to be realistic and approve this pipeline immediately. It's about time we start laying pipe.
Just look it up on UrbanDictionary.com. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Des, this week Republicans in Michigan voted to put union workers on the endangered species list. What other trouble are they currently causing that puts them in today's Green News Report?
Well, right now it's more bad news for wolves in Michigan. Now, we reported on Tuesday the killing of Yellowstone National Park's most famous wolf by a hunter. Now, as you said, the Republican majority in the Michigan State Legislature has designated the American gray wolf as a game species in the state just months after wolves were removed from the federal endangered species list.
Well, there must be a whole lot of wolves in Michigan if they're putting them on the game list.
Absolutely not. There's only about 700 that are believed to still survive in Michigan's Upper Peninsula.
Unbelievable.
A county judge in Texas has lifted a temporary restraining order halting construction of a portion of the southern leg of the Keystone XL pipeline. The East Texas landowner who sued the pipeline company TransCanada alleged that TransCanada lied to him and the state in claiming that crude oil would be transported in the pipeline rather than heavy Canadian tar sands diluted bitumen. In lifting the order, the judge said landowner Michael Bishop had, quote, raised some interesting questions, but had already accepted payment for allowing TransCanada to use his land and thus could have nothing else to stop it with.
So he's saying that TransCanada misled him about the type of oil that would be going through this pipeline, and in fact this heavier tar sands oil, he didn't understand what it was?
He's arguing that diluted bitumen is not actually crude oil since it has to be processed when it comes out of the ground. So that's his basis.
Bitumen?
Yes, bitumen.
All right. Back to the Urban Dictionary, I guess.
Pipeline explosion in West Virginia.
If we would have been 5 seconds later, I think we would have been right in the middle of the fireball.
I thought someone was blowing up dynamite on the side of the road, honestly.
And just the ground coming up into the sky.
The National Transportation and Safety Board is investigating the cause of a massive explosion and fire on an interstate natural gas transmission pipeline on Tuesday. The fire was so intense it melted four lanes of a highway near Charleston, West Virginia. No deaths, but several residents were injured in the fire.
Chunks of mountainside at interstate flying with such force, they actually crashed through the roof inside his house. Daryl knew he lived close to a transmission gas line, but exactly how close and the risks involved, well, he had no idea.
Watchdog groups say the increase in high-profile pipeline disasters in recent years indicates that federal pipeline safety inspections are unable to keep up with the increased volume in natural gas and oil production in the U.S. But as local station WSAZ reports, one resident has his own safety plan.
And that's to move as far away from gas lines now as possible.
Any massive wind farm disasters this week?
No, not recently.
Any terrible solar spills?
No, turns out not a one.
Imagine that.
And now a follow-up on the UN climate talks that ended this past weekend in Doha, Qatar. For the first time at the talks, poor nations pushed for a compensation fund for loss and damage from rich nations. They pointed to President Obama's request to Congress for $60 billion in Hurricane Sandy recovery funds. They say rich nations have both the capacity and the responsibility to assist poor nations in recovering from extreme weather disasters, which are predicted to become more powerful due to climate change. And since the poorest nations have not contributed historically to global emissions, yet will be impacted the most by global warming. But Republicans in the U.S. Congress are already threatening to hold Hurricane Sandy recovery funds hostage.
Of course they are.
Just as they did after Hurricane Irene and other recent disasters, House Republicans are already suggesting that any disaster relief funding should be offset by cuts elsewhere. New Jersey Republican Representative Scott Garrett on CNBC.
We're at $239 billion in deficit, I think, in the first couple of months this year, and they're talking about adding $60 billion on top of that.
If New Jersey doesn't get that spend, even if it's a little bit wasteful, for heaven's sake, wouldn't Billy going to be hurt?
Sure. So one person's stimulus is another person's wasteful spending.
A recent report from NASA concludes that every $1 spent on prevention saves New York City $4 in repairs.
Read about that and much more we couldn't get to today at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help support the Green News Report. It's the end of the year, so we hope you'll keep us in mind. Also, keep in mind, you can download our reports anytime via iTunes, listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher Radio, find us and like us on the Facebook, and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. Bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Have no pity, Jersey City, once again will shine. With home Del Cape May, Phillipsburg, I like our state just fine. Jersey girls go.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Man, we hit that square on the top. That's almost good enough for satellite broadcast and automation systems and stuff. Hi, Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. Listener-supported radio with Dr. John's challenge still out there. We've had some response, but it is not fully met. So your help is much appreciated. By the way, and the phone lines are open, 304-658-3333, until one of these days when we've got enough cash laying around to get the get the 800 number out of its, what do we call it, hostage situation. Yeah. Just a little follow-up real quick before we do go back to the phones. And I am hotting up Skype, too, right now. Bob Kincaid Horn handle at Skype, if you want to connect that way. Works pretty well, I think. No, just a little karmic moment. I don't know. Did I mention this? Do you know this? Yeah, I think I did mention it, but it's worth re-mentioning, I think. Senator Joe Blanche Manchin, you know, Blanche Lincoln, but with better hair, has been having him a full-on hissy lately about the MTV show Buck Wild, which is the replacement to Jersey Shore, which features poorly educated, ill-mannered West Virginians doing the kind of dumb things that bulletproof 20-somethings do, at least in this state. Oh, he's upset. It portrays West Virginia in an unfavorable and unfair light, he says, as if blowing up, setting off 5.5 million pounds of high explosives a day is exactly the light we want. Well, Buck Wild is shot in and around the environs of Sissonville, West Virginia, where the pipeline blew up and created a sort of, oh, I don't know, Hellboy wall of road-melting flame across Interstate 77. Careful with that karma, Joe! Joe, the karma bites, especially when you're not nice to it. Handle it real easy. Like throwing hissies about TV shows when you're directly supportive of companies that are poisoning the people of your own state. Yeah, handle the karma with care, Joe. Right, yeah. Off to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Well, hey, Tracy, what's up?
Not much. I've been, I don't know if it was my phone or whatever. Were you gone last week, or was I just crazy?
No, I was gone. Okay. I was off in far northwest Wisconsin.
Wisconsin?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Because, you know me, I'm so behind the times and checking up on news and stuff, but... I don't know if you heard out here, there was a strike at the port out here in Long Beach and Los Angeles. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I did.
And, you know, they settled. Yay, union. But it was so funny because, like, 2 days after the strike, I picked up this lady from the airport and we were having a nice conversation. And she said she was out here on business. And I'm like, okay, so what do you do? And she kind of hesitated. And I'm like, what? She's like, well, I'm a union rep, and I'm like, wow, how awesome. She represents the hotel workers out here in L.A. And so we had this fabulous conversation about unions. Because she had heard about the strike out here at the courts, but she didn't know what was going on. And I told her it was clerical workers, and they were trying to make sure that they were stopping outsourcing and all that. The strike lasted for 8 days. Now, the problem was, what a lot of people were having is that with the strike, was because of how much these people make. I think they're making about anywhere upwards of $65,000 a year or more, right? And so you had all these people going, well, you know, how dare they strike, and they're making this much money, and yada, 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 yada. And I'm thinking to myself, well, they're striking because they want to be able to keep those jobs in this country. And, you know, it was great because the Teamsters, nobody crossed the picket line.
Nice.
Nobody. The Teamsters, the, you know, because the dock workers, the Teamsters and all that, no one crossed that picket line, and they had to settle. And so we were talking, we both did a brief history, of what I knew about the unions. And it's because of unions, you know, we had higher safety protocols. We had, you know, people of color able to make a decent living. Because everybody does not want to go to college, okay? So you have people that, you know, work in these, in, you know, on the docks and the mines and all this. Why shouldn't they get paid a decent living wage? So I don't know if they could take care of their family. I'm crazy like that, right?
Right. We understand.
You know, I'm listening to, I guess there was a pipeline explosion in your part of the country again today?
That was a couple of days ago, but yes.
A couple of days ago. And so, but nobody was hurt. But this wasn't like anything having to do with mining. What was this about? It was...
just negligence. Just more fruits of that absence of that communist regulation.
Regulations. Oh, where you have to do things a certain way to avoid.
Right, or you know, where you want to be like safe and stuff.
Oh, safe. Okay. Damn. You know.
Because the pipeline was running near people's houses and families.
And see, this is my problem. You know, when I hear about these people talking about, you know, we need to deregulate more, we need to get rid of unions and stuff like that, and then I hear about, you know, mines caving in on people, pipeline explosions, you know, little things like that.
Yeah.
And people wonder why we need unions and regulations. I just get so, because see, you know, knowledge is a dangerous thing, and granted, I didn't get a lot of my knowledge until about, you know, four or five years ago. I went back to school. Well, I could really appreciate what I was learning. It didn't go in one ear and out the other. It actually stayed and marinated, and I had to think something. But I've always been pro-union. When I first, one of my very first jobs, I was a cashier at Ralph's. When I left Ralph's, in 1990, I was a journeyman cashier making $19 an hour with full union benefits. In 1990. Do you know anybody that makes that kind of money now?
About none.
Okay. So this is 1990s money. And I'm just thinking to myself, because I love the idea of, yes, everybody's, oh, unions are corrupt.
And Ralph's is about the same thing as Kroger's back this way.
Yes, Ralph's. And, well, when I worked for Ralph's, it was not owned by Kroger. It was still family. It was still owned out here. Kroger bought it long after I left.
And that's when the hit the fan, right?
Yes. They do not. The union is nowhere near as strong as it was when I was working there, and it saddens me because it's like, you know, I just don't understand how the demonization, did I say that right?
Yeah.
Of union, and I just don't get it. They're only here. They're here to help people who otherwise would be kicked to the curb. You know, people like, you know, I look at, you know, the hotel employees. I mean, these people get shift wages to do back-breaking work, and they're lucky if they get tipped. And these hotels are making...
Oh, there's millions. Yeah, there's very little in the so-called hospitality industry.
Exactly.
That is in the way of humane.
No,
your only hope in the hospitality industry is to have a union. Because otherwise, it's strictly 19th century.
Very much so. And I'm seeing a trend that we are slowly, or actually very quickly, slipping back into the 19th century.
I don't think we're slipping. I think it's a case of being driven, Tracy.
I think it's a free fall, actually. You know, because it is getting to the point where people are just, it's gotten to the point, not getting, but gotten to the point where people are just working, you know, two and three jobs just to survive. And then you hear our buddies in the, you know, the Republican caucus saying that are they actually going to try to hold money back from Hurricane Sandy survivors or whatnot as a bargaining chip? Are they really going to do this?
Right, because our country, Scott, can't afford to rebuild these places. And they don't even realize that some of these places were the sort of places that Republicans live in.
Right. Now, my question is, because, you know, I'm kind of slow in the uptake. Are all these idiots talking crap, the ones that are talking crap, or the ones that they're just so gerrymandered so they cannot lose an election? Or are some of them, you know?
I don't know if you can gerrymander around that much hate and stupid. But yeah, I think that the redistrict. Yeah, I think some of that is the case.
Okay, because see, I'm still, you know, so.
But that's okay. You know, one of the stories that went down while I was gone had to do with a piece of legislation that worked its way through the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the vote was 397-1, and it was a vote to remove the word retarded from our you know, national legislation, because it's not a very nice word.
It is not.
And it's not even an accurate word, or maybe the word was lunatic, another one of those. And 397 members, Republicans and Democrats alike, said, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's get rid of it. One guy.
Who was the asshole?
Louis Gohmert of Texas.
Louis who? And Israel?
Gohmert.
What was it about Texas? Louis what?
Gohmert. G-O-H-M-E-R-T.
Oh, I know he caught hell growing up. Gomer, Goober. He caught particular hell.
Yeah, hey to Goober.
Oh, Goober. Oh, I'm having fun with it, and I don't even know the guy. So he was the
one. Oh, look him up. Look him up. He is. He's better than a trip to the county fair. With a half a pint of gin in your pocket.
No, is he like freak show? Like, you know?
He's one of the king freaks. I mean, he's one of the Kliegel goobers. He is a grand exalted numbnuts.
And this is one of these things you gotta wonder. How in God, I mean, I know for the most part Americans are not that stupid. This guy
is so far gone, Tracy, that, I mean, you've heard people say dumber than a bag of hammers.
Right.
Well, the hammers in that bag all have handles that say Gohmert Industries.
Ah! God, you're killing me. You're killing me. I just, you know, I try so desperately because I don't watch the news like I should, because when I do, I start yelling at the television, and my girl's like, sweetheart, you're going to give yourself an aneurysm because you're letting yourself get so upset. But I can't help it, because it's just like, you hear, you know, people like...
Oh, no. They're all out there. I don't know if you realize this. Has anybody told you, Tracy? You have a national imperative now.
Yes.
1L Michelle Bachman wants you to read the Koran.
Why does she want me to read the Koran?
Well, because she said, well, first of all, America is being swept away on a tide of creeping Sharia law. First of all,
isn't that what she ran on?
Mm-hmm.
I thought we settled this. Oh wait, I'm sorry. Obama's a Muslim, so no, we haven't settled it.
Right.
Muslim, atheist. Wait. A Muslim, atheist, socialist.
Yeah.
Isn't that what? Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. A group of Muslim Americans signed a statement asking the Department of Homeland Security to stop distributing anti-Muslim materials, and that got 1L Michelle all kinds of worked up. And so she says, we need to read the Koran, and the quote is, that's right. That's why we need to know what their belief system is. We need to know what they truly believe. That's why the most important thing a person could do in World War II was to read the book that the leader of Germany wrote.
Mein Kampf?
That's the same thing the interviewer asked.
And she had no idea what he was talking about, right?
Well, she said, because he laid out very clearly what his intention was. He wasn't hiding it. The Islamist does the same thing. They do not hide it. They lay it out very clearly. But what we've never seen before is the United States aiding and abetting that goal. But what I love I love the way these idiot baggers talk, Tracy.
She actually said that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, really. No, I've got the sound clip right here. I was just being merciful by not playing it.
Oh, but you have to, because
what I love is the way she says it, that the leader of Germany wrote. I've been cogitating on this, and there's only three possibilities that come to mind. One is she could not come up with Hitler on the fly.
Right.
Two is that somebody informed her about Godwin's law, and she was afraid she would lose by mentioning him. And three, and I think most likely, she thinks of Hitler in the same vein as Beetlejuice, and then all somebody else would have to do is say it two more times, and bang, there he'd be.
These people are...
The leader of Germany wrote. The Bismarck?
You know, see...
Metternich?
Which leader?
Right.
Which leader?
Because some of us know that there's been more than one. I mean, Angela Merkel?
Oh, God. The leader of Germany.
Yeah, okay, you're going to make me do this, aren't you?
Yes, see?
All right, stand by. I'm going to mute you for a minute. Stand by.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, ye of little faith.
Mm-hmm. It's your fault. You shouldn't have said that.
That's what I spent my whole year doing, was talking about this issue of what the OIC was trying to do with their 10-year plan, and all of these efforts in the Obama administration. The only conclusion you could make is that they are embracing the 10-year plan and are supporting it. And that's why this October 19th document is so important, and it's why I need to get it for you, because that is proof positive. Every piece that's put into place is leading to one direction. This isn't deviating. It's leading to one direction. And that ultimate goal, it seems to be, is to allow for mandating, following every demand of the Islamists. And we know what their ultimate demand is.
Oh, yeah, Sharia law.
That's right. And so that's why we need to know what their belief system is. We need to know what they truly believe. That's why the most important thing a person could do in World War II during that conflict was to read the book that the leader of Germany wrote.
Yeah, mine too.
Because he laid out very clearly what his intention was.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't hiding it.
Mm-hmm.
The Islamist does the same thing.
Yep.
They do not hide it. They lay it out very clearly. But what we've never seen before is the United States aiding and abetting that goal.
Is that not just precious?
See, things like this troubles me the most.
Well, wait. Can I tell you? You know what troubles me the most, Tracy?
What?
There are a purple polka-dotted blue gajillion right-wing owned radio stations in this mm-hmm. country ready to run with that.
Yes.
And that means that there is some significant several millions of Marvelines out there. Emory, Congress, that great patriot Congresswoman Bachmann, that's a German name, isn't it? She says we have to go read the Koran, Emory. Get right on it. I get right on it, Marvelline. I mean, how many? How many million? Come on. If there's not 1,000 of these radio stations, there ain't one.
And here, that scary thing about the fact that, you know, these people believe it. And that's what troubles me, is that, you know, Michelle Bachmann is one person. As crazy as she is, she is only one person. So what the scary thing is are the people who listen to her and take her word as the gospel truth. And those are the people who are going to, vote her back into office. Those are the people who listen to her and go shooting up, you know, malls and movie theaters and, you know, stuff like that.
College campuses, high school buildings.
You put in the public place, you know, insert public place and add crazy person with the gun. You know, the people who, the thing, you know, that listen. Like that idiot, what was it, the guy, was it Norway? Where was it?
Brevik, Norway?
Yeah, that he killed those people at the Christian Bible camp because of stuff that, listening to, you know, Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck. And nobody talked about that. None of the crazy right-wingers talked about that bullshit. But let that have been a Muslim. Or
No. That example is out there already. Let one Fox News reporter abandon his objectivity and enter a fight and get punched in the face, and all of a sudden, Americans for Prosperity, they done had them a news conference today in Lansing, Michigan, and they called on the union thugs to stop being so thuggy.
The union thugs to stop being so thuggy?
Yeah, and quit tearing our tents down. Well, I'll tell you what, Americans for Prosperity, what say you stop attacking people's right to earn a damn living?
How about that?
And their freedom of association, which, after all, is enshrined in the First Amendment to the Constitution and is considered to be a civil right.
How about them apples?
We've been talking about, and the great Charles Pierce is the one who came up with the word Mississippi for Michigan. Yeah, I thought you'd like that. Now, if you're not reading Charles Pierce every day, it's something's wrong.
Well, no, I hear him a couple of times a week on Stephanie Miller.
Oh, he's on Steffi? He goes on Steffi?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I could read him all. He's just genius.
And I'm going to have to.
But what I was going to ask you is, do you find it interesting that nobody out there is describing this? This legislative skullduggery in Michigan as a civil rights violation.
Nope.
Because that's what it is. Because the First Amendment enshrines some civil rights, but the only time that we're interested in them is if it applies to some daggum tax-exempt right-wing church.
Mm-hmm. And I'm still waiting, you know, because I think I told you what happened to me in 2004, and I was going to one of those mega churches. I won't even say the name because I'm not even going to give them the, you know, any airtime. But this was, you know, the last, you know, election of, you know, George W. And this is long before I even cared, you know, I voted, but I was never really involved in the political, you know, and so the pastor of the church stood up in front of the church, and basically he was talking to the black members of the church, because apparently a church on the East Coast, it was the AME church. You know, for those of you who don't know what AME is, African Methodist Episcopal, it's basically the highfalutin black church. Basically, the pastor of that church told his congregants, his members, not to vote for George Bush because he was, you know, pro-life.
Right.
Basically.
Because he loved the little fetuses.
He loved the fetus, hate the baby. He was saying, well, you know, if this church can go against voting Democrat after all these years, then, you know, these are things that you should think about as members of this church.
Right.
I was talking to the black folks. So as I sat there, I picked up my Bible and picked up my purse and walked out, never to return. Because, again, I'm thinking of the Constitution, and I'm thinking about why our forefathers left. Well, your forefathers. Well, unless I'm related to Thomas Jefferson, I may be.
Well, you know, and that's pretty good company to be in, because remember, and this is just a little historical aside, Tracy, remember, Thomas Jefferson's wife was the half-sister of Sally Hemings.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's Randolph, and Sally Hemings, Sally came with Thomas's wife. And, well, old Marse Randolph, well, he went walkabout, too, only not out of no church.
Right.
Yeah, so Sally Hemings was actually the half-sister of Thomas Jefferson's wife, who then died. And, you know, you can imagine that they might have resembled each other, as sisters sometimes will.
Sisters sometimes look alike, you know. It's a disparagate. But, you know,
in some ways, it can be downright biblical. But no,
ask Jacob about this.
Yeah, that's true. What do you mean I don't get Rachel?
What do you mean I get Leah?
I signed on for Rachel.
And I had to had 10 kids with old girl. I did not want her. I wanted the cute one.
Yeah.
See, just ask. See, remember, okay, we're doing the Bible study thing. It's kind of scary. But, you know, I remember this is the people coming over from England and whatnot came here to get away from the persecution.
Well, but, no, when we're talking about the so-called pilgrims, the Puritans, that's part of our national myth, Tracy. Actually, they were so intolerant of everybody else that they deemed everybody else not doing what they wanted to be the same thing as them getting persecuted. Okay.
Oh, got you. Okay.
So when they got on the boat and left, the entire sceptered isle looked at the Puritans and said, "Goodbye now.
Bye.
Good luck.
Bye. Bye bye."
Yeah, hope you didn't take a lot of food with you. Because if we were doing video, you'd see I'm sitting here waving bye-bye at the Puritan.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Because they were assholes. So that came here to avoid religious persecution stuff. is another little bit of that historical revisionism.
That lie.
But you know, I'm funny and I'm funny in the head that way, and so that's and I know my history fairly well, and so when I heard that clip of Grover Norquist talking about he and the Republicans in the House and the Senate were going to keep Barack Hussein Obama on a very short leash.
Excuse me, is that what you were talking about?
Yes, ma'am.
I came in, because I was hearing you talk about leash and all this, and I was shuddering because I didn't hear what preceded what you were talking about with the leash. So Grover Norquist, the man that
wants to drown America in the bathtub.
Right.
So yeah, now Grover wants to keep our first African-American president
On a short leash.
And like I said, I don't know, maybe we could rebrand this program, or maybe I need to do a different segment for Morning Drive or something called History That Makes Me Want to Kick Furniture with Bob Kincaid. Because see, now here I am, and I mean, honest to Jesus, we've never met or anything, Tracy, but I mean, I can open the refrigerator, put my hand under the bulb, and come out with a nasty burn. I'm that white.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, I'm about as pink as they come.
Wow.
But yet, I know enough of my history, and I know how brutal that history is, and I know how hate-filled some of that history is.
Yeah.
That I hear about putting a leash on a human being, and first place my mind goes is the Middle Passage.
Yes.
And human beings stacked like cordwood and laid mm-hmm. end to end in the hold of a ship that was going to take mm-hmm. weeks to get across mm-hmm. the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And human beings laying in their own waste and praying for mm-hmm. death and God not right. hearing them and keeping them alive.
Praying for death and keeping the men's legs, you know, shackled together, but the only
and so that filthy son of a bitch, self-made, lest I appear sexist, dares to suggest that a leash should be put on the President of the United States. I will dare say that man should be whipped in his own right.
He should be tarred and feathered. Here's what I would like for one white person. I don't know, somebody like Norquist or Mittens or any of these, you know, self-righteous, you know, self-made, you know, billionaires or whatever who have no idea what it's like in the real world and don't care. See, here's the thing. There's people who have empathy. There are rich people who have empathy. And they are, you know, they do things for those, you know, less fortunate and whatnot and so forth because they, you know, they may have never walked, you know, a couple of blocks in my or your shoes, you know, juggling, you know, okay, so what do I pay this week? Who do I beg for mercy? The light bill or the gas bill? Do we eat beans and rice for the entire week? Maybe we might be able to get a piece of salt pork and throw in the beans to get a little more flavor to it. But at least there are some people I look like, you know, the Kennedys and whatnot and so forth. And then you have these people like Grover Norquist and Mittens and Karl Rove and their ilk. It's not that they don't even give a damn. That's the thing. It's not that they don't even care. They have no empathy. They don't want to have empathy. And then what do we call them? I don't know, sociopaths?
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't give a damn. They know the difference between right and wrong. And that makes it even worse because they know the difference between right and wrong. They know what they're doing to this country. They're not doing this blindly. They're not, you know, doing mountaintop removal in your part of the country. They're not, you know, polluting, you know, and making cars and stuff like that for my part of the country that are pollutants and stuff like that, and nuclear power plants that are on built on fault lines and things like that. They know what they are doing. They just don't care. It's all about, I want to make as much money as I possibly can, and damn the consequences. Damn what's going to happen to people in West Virginia or these states where they're doing the fracking and all this other stuff. So what? They're just hillbillies?
Yeah.
They're just, you know, so what? They're just,
I mean, it's not like they're our kind of people, Tracy.
They're not our kind of people. You know, so what? They're just a bunch of beaners. Whatever.
Yeah.
You know, insert... You didn't know
where I was last week. I was actually up in Wisconsin, because there's some folks up there with some of that walking around money.
Oh.
And they want to bring mountaintop removal to northwest Wisconsin. And go after some iron ore that just happens to sit hard by the protected lands of the reservation of the Bad River Band of the Anishinaabe people, the Chippewa, the Ojibwe people.
So, okay.
You know, the original recipients of white oppression and genocide.
Right.
And it's, you know, oh. and everybody up there got it. Everybody understood. Or most of them did, what was at stake, and who was wanting to do what to whom.
And yet and still, you still have these people going, well, you know, we have to, because people have all this money and stuff, they still got to breathe the same air we have to. Are they building themselves bubbles?
That's the open question. I mean... There's so many of these things out there. For instance, I mentioned the Ojibwe people. Eric Cantor is hotly opposed to reauthorizing the Violence Against Women Act.
He's opposed.
Yeah. You know what's got him upset?
Pray tell why.
Well, he's all bent out of shape because the Violence Against Women Act has specific provisions that would protect Native American women from abuse.
So he's has a Pocahontas fantasy or something?
I don't know, but there are some new protections in the reauthorization that would protect or add additional protections for Native American women who suffer physical and or sexual abuse.
See, here's my question. You know,
here's how it breaks out. On Indian reservations, tribal authorities cannot make an arrest, cannot respond to domestic violence on the reservation if it turns out that the abuser isn't Native American. That means that a lot of non-Native abusers go unpunished if the crime is committed on tribal lands.
OMG.
The reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act changes some of that.
Oh. In other words...
And Eric Cantor can't stand that because that's more of that government intrusion.
Mm-hmm. So he's upset that some white guy can't come on to or Indian reservation or black guy or whatever, but I'm talking about white guy. and come on to a, we'll be able to come on to an Indian reservation and beat and rape Native American woman and get away with it.
Right.
Oh. So that's, because like I said, I'm slow on the uptake sometimes, Bob.
No, you're uptaking just fine, Tracy.
I have stuff that I have to do, Washington did and with him and Tom Hanks, Philadelphia, whatever.
Yeah.
Talk to me like I'm a second grader. We both know I'm not that. Well, that's the average American. I actually do know how to read and comprehend. And speaking as a woman who survived, as a survivor of horrible sexual abuse that went, unreported for the most part, because I knew nothing would be done. And I am glad that they're finally coming to these protections, But see, here's my problem with all white women that get these people so worked up that,
if you and me stayed on here all night and I kept this mic open for every call that could come in, we would not ever fully figure out what it is that is the absolute source of the misogyny that absolutely runs rampant inside the Repiglican party. But the fact of the matter is, the Violence Against Women Act is one piece of evidence. Texas is another piece of evidence. They're going to ramp up there. Rick Perry says he's going to make Texas a safe haven for the fetus. And Mississippi just passed a brand on the heels of all this labor BS. They just passed one of the harshest laws in the country as far as women getting access to appropriate medical care and appropriate reproductive care.
Is this all going in the wake of the soon-to-be law of the land of Obamacare?
No. What it is the pro-life movement decided that it wasn't getting anywhere in the federal government, so they were going to move their fights and make every single state, make women in every single state fight for their own rights, because they've got the money to do it, and the women in many states don't. Okay, but it's also an outgrowth of the strange phenomenon we saw in this past election, whereby Barack Obama stomped the guts out of Bishop Willard Romney, but down ballot, the Republicans did real good.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got themselves a nasty majority in Michigan. And the same thing can be said, Wisconsin. They've got a majority the Republicans have a majority in the House and in the Assembly and the Senate there.
I'm never leaving California.
We damn near came close to losing the House of Delegates in West Virginia, and probably would have if it were not for the fact that you cannot tell the difference between a whole lot of Democrats and a whole lot of Republicans in this state, because they don't give a damn about anything but coal, neither one.
Well, we have a super majority here.
Yeah. Enjoy it. But don't think that it's permanent, and don't think that you don't have to defend it every day.
I will be defending it. See, this is one of those things that, when I joke about, running for office, and I listen to the idiots that are, in office, federal office, and I'm thinking to myself, how? Because I know a lot of these people did not ever run for local office or stuff like that, and I think it should be a requirement. Yeah, prerequisite. We both went to college, okay, and you had to take, English 101 and then, 201. There was a steady progression. You just could not come in as a freshman in college and jump into upperclassmen classes because you were not prepared for the world of a senior in college. And, Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, you don't teach calculus to third graders.
Exactly. So if a lot of these people, I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, because again, you know, going to uptake, but of those people, especially the teabaggers who were elected into federal office, how many of them ever, like, served on a school board or, you know, city council or ran for dog catcher or anything who would know the inner working of working in the government office? Because even if I decided out of some crazy idea of running for office, I have met the closest I've been to, you know, I was what, senior class, whatever, treasurer, and I was on the, I was a class in school politics when I went back to school. Never would I have ever thought about running for a major office like, you know, a federal office without having some kind of, you know, experience.
Well, that doesn't slow down a bagger.
That's what I'm saying.
No. You're not down with bagger philosophy. See, what we need in Washington, D.C., is more beltway outsiders, what don't know nothing about no Constitution nor nothing else about no lawmaking, so they can go in and have pure free market capitalist ideas of liberty and freedom, which will then make America better.
Mm-hmm. That's their philosophy. You're right, you know, and because see, I'm under the misconception that people who run for office do so for the betterment of the country. And not for
No. there are some. I dare say there are more than a few who serve out of a sense of obligation and dedication. And dare I say patriotism. But our system is such, and many political systems are such, that they reward two things, wealth and ambition. And neither wealth nor ambition have a mandatory component, Tracy, of intelligence.
No. George Bush,
I got to take out Saddam because he tried to kill my daddy.
Right. Now, so you're going to send all these people to war, kill all these bright young men and women who came into the service. Not so much. Yeah, they had a sense of patriotism and whatnot and so forth. But let's face it, a lot of them, you know, they were sold a bill of goods. Well, you know, if you, you know, serve your country, then we'll pay for you to go to school and whatnot, GI Bill and, you know, you'll be able to get to a house once, you know.
Yeah, not getting killed. That's really the key to the benefits plan. By the way, Marty wrote in, Tracy. He's in Northern California. He said, tell Tracy I am intending to leave California. I'm just not staying in the U.S. when I leave California, unless Puerto Rico becomes the 51st state, and then I'll leave Puerto Rico.
You know what? I feel Marty. I feel him because it's like, I, you know, I love my country and I love my state, but I try to think, you know, I get these glimmers of hope. You know, our president was reelected. The clerical workers union won the strike. I mean, I don't know how much, but there was the strike was settled, but they still had their job. I see these glimmers of hope, you know. You hear about, you know, the concert that went on last night, the 12-12-12 concert, and which I did not watch because I can only stand so much. But you see these glimmers of hope, people standing together to help other people and whatnot and so forth. And then I hear stuff about our president needing to be on a leash. I hear that, you know, the Republicans.
Couldn't somebody out there raise a stink about that?
This is what I don't understand.
I mean, because before you called in, it was being pointed out that nobody else had mentioned the leash business today.
Not one. Well, nobody. It was the same as when nobody mentioned when Mittens you know, so which one was he? Tag, whatever the fuck his name was. Basically threatened the president.
Oh, yeah. Was that the Osmond-looking one?
Yeah, I think so.
With the big old mouth full of teeth?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Said that he would, you know, if he had been there, he would have slapped the president. Really?
Well, and I mean, like I said, there's been numerous instances when I forget who it was, but Reverend Al was on hand when somebody referred to the president to Reverend Al as your boy.
That was me bringing that up because Reverend Pat Robertson.
Was that Pat?
Was it Pat? No. No. Oh, right. I forget which. They all begin to.
They run together
into one ugly, big, white, angry white.
Right. Those right wing gas bags. They all look alike to me.
They all begin. It was Pat Robertson. It might have been Bill O'Reilly. And see, I suffer no fools, and I never cared much about Al Sharpe, Reverend Al, because I just thought he was a blowhard and just full of shit. But anyway, when he said, "Yo boy Obama," Reverend Al was like, first of all, he's your president too, and he's not a boy, he's a grown ass man. And he's like, oh, I didn't mean, you know how when they get called on their shit, they start backpedaling, you know, peddling and stuff like that. And it was just classic. One of those things that I wish if I hadn't been thinking, I would have saved, you know, hit record. I rewound it and then hit record on my DVR just to save it, just to see him trying to put the words back into his mouth. Oh, I didn't mean it like that. And Reverend Al was like, yes, you did.
Well, the same thing with Grover in this clip where he said, we're going to keep President Obama on a very short leash, fiscally speaking. I mean, even he knew what he had just said.
Well, who was it with the rope? Was that Mittens about the rope and hanging the president?
Oh, not really. They all run together. The only one that really stands out for me is Rick Bro Fro Mix Santorum, because we got a twofer out of him when he decided to create a new class of Americans called Blah People, Blah People.
What are Blah People? I missed that one.
Oh no! Goodness me! Oh. No, that was when he was talking and said he didn't want to take people's money to give to black people for welfare. And he said, I didn't say black, I said blah. Blah, people.
Oh. And what was...
Like I said, because of twofer, and I mentioned this one earlier, too, when he referred to the president as, we know what candidate Obama was like, an anti-war, pro-government nig.
Now,
I remember Rick Santorum because, you know, he sort of chiseled his own face on the Mount Rushmore of Republican bigotry, prejudice, racism, and general shit heelishness.
Now, which one was the one with the ranch in?
Oh, that's Rick Perry.
Now, what was the name? Because what was the name of the ranch?
I ain't gonna say it.
Come on.
No.
Well, then, come on. Or text it to me or something. Tweet me with it. Because I every time somebody said it,
something,
I never heard
something
it.
Head ranch, okay?
It's...
Word. Wait. N-word head ranch.
No. Why are you messing with... Why are you... Quit playing. Stop.
No, that's the Perry Family Ranch in Texas. N-word head ranch.
But they're white people. Why would a bunch of white people want to be on a ranch called Nickerhead? Really?
Really?
Seriously?
Not kidding.
Are there a bunch of little nappy headed Negroes? Oh, did I tell you? My girlfriend, her ex, you know, is one of those Democrats was no longer a Democrat because our president is black and he's a Democrat, so they became Republican.
Mm.
So she refers to me as a nigger, right? Well, yeah. She called me a nigglet. And I told Jan...
See, that word gives me the shudders, okay? It does.
Nigglet?
No, well, the other
I
one.
I said, make sure... I said, if she's going to call me out of my name, make sure she does it right, because I'm not a nigglet. Nigglet is a small Negro child. Last I checked, I was a grown-ass woman. So if you really want to be, you know,
just
the right...
Yeah, just get, yeah, just get on with it and use it.
Right. You know, don't, you know... And then be careful
that your fist doesn't run into my face. Your face right. Doesn't run into my fist.
My fist, because, see, she always says, I don't mean it. When I say these things, I say it to upset Jan. And I'm like, no, this is in your heart. Because, no, if you were just saying it just to upset somebody... Why are you taking great pains to let me know that you would not vote for our president? And this woman was a lifelong Democrat. Lifelong.
Oh, we got them by the passel here in this state. Okay?
You know?
Lifelong Democrats that couldn't get to the polls fast enough to vote for Willard because, well, that one.
Well, it's like, you know, Randy Rhodes brought something up about this past election. That the Republicans, the people that voted Republican voting, they weren't actually voting for Mitt Romney. They were voting against Obama.
Oh, there was an element of that, because there is a whole passel of right-wing America that was completely nonplussed by Bishop Willard. I mean, about every Baptist that voted for him had to hold his nose, because no matter how many times it showed up on Billy Graham's website that Mormonism wasn't a cult, you can't spend a few generations explaining to somebody that it is and then turn around and say it ain't.
Right, because you know. I would say
fully two-thirds of the Romney vote, Tracy, was we got to get that one out of our White House.
Right.
Anybody. If Satan, with his cloven hooves and pointy tail and two horns and his pitchfork, had been running with the GOP nomination, the Baptists and the Methodists would have run out and voted for, because he wasn't, well, you know, better to have a red devil than a, well, you know.
A black one. Well, it's like, you know,
At least the devil's not a Muslim.
But that's the thing. There was a full page ad on Election Day from Billy Graham.
Yes.
Who
probably does not have enough brain power left to write his name. This is all done by Franklin. At this point, Billy Graham's just Captain Pike with the little beep 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 chair, and Franklin's got doing it all.
Saying like Ronald Reagan. I mean, I was just like. And, you know, like I said, I use my mom as an example that she's, you know, going to Liberty University. And, you know, so it tickled her about this whole with Billy Graham. And she's like, because she brought it up. I was shocked, because she and I try to steer clear of each other when it comes to politics, as far as the religious thing is concerned. And she's like, how is it that this man, and she even said it wasn't Billy Graham, because like you said, he probably doesn't have enough brain cells to know that he's pissed himself, let alone...
No, he can't even chew his own oatmeal at this point.
Right. And so for them to have a full-page ad and say that, you know, all of a sudden Mormonism isn't a cult, since when?
No. I mean, places like Pat Robertson, you, and Jerry Falwell, you, and I mean, I'm sure they've got upper-level graduate religion classes with names like the Mormons. What a freaky bunch of cultists, you know?
Yeah.
Section 402.
Yeah, and I'm pretty, and I, you know, and I was, so my mom got her degree in theology, and so I know, because she was talking, you know, some of the stuff that she read about. Or about Mormonism, and there's some other religions that just scared the bejesus out of me. I'm like, Jesus Christ, are you kidding me? Because she had to do, you know, one of her final papers was about, you know, take a cult or whatever and do, you know, research about, you know, their approach to what happens when you die or after you die. But she's like, she knew some about as much as most people know about Mormonism. And so when she started, you know, studying religion, she's like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? And I'm like, I said, look, the only thing I know about Mormonism is what I learned when I went to go see the Book of Mormon. Which was hilarious. It was just the most amazingly hilarious thing I've ever seen. But what's so funny is, you know, the Book of Mormon ended here last month, and guess what's here now at the State Theater? Are you ready?
Tell me.
Dottie and Marie Christmas.
Oh, dear.
Is that irony? I mean, I don't...
I was kind of hoping for Monty Python and the Holy Grail, but...
No, that was here before, and I missed it. But just the fact that in the very same theater where a group of people were basically talking major shit about your religion, and here you come, Donnie and Marie Christmas. Because the best part about it is when...
yeah, but bless their hearts, the Osmonds never tried to really run it down, make anybody... You know, they didn't say good night, and Kola bless you or anything at the end of the programs. I got to figure the Osmonds are kind of disturbed at that one Romney's running around out there looking like, well, you know.
Well, it's like it's the same thing with Scientology. You know, like you said, the Mormons. I mean, the Osmonds. You knew they were Mormons, but that's it. You know, you didn't know any details about Mormonism. You know, you just knew they were from Utah. There's a whole bunch of them.
And they didn't flaunt the horses that they owned or anything. Yeah, I love that article in the Washington Post. It was the bizarrest damn thing I've read, talking about how sad Willard and Ann are now that they're not going to get to be president, and how Ann sits in rooms going through crying jags all day long, and she's desperately trying to get interested in her horses again.
Yeah,
that's just nuts. Hey Tracy, I got to roll, but it's been awful good talking to you, dear. And don't be such a stranger. Now I won't be here tomorrow evening, but I'll be back all next week.
Okay, my dear. Well, you know what? You can put me on hold so I can get the rest of the show.
Oh, sure thing. All right, happy to stand by.
All right.
That's Tracy, the lady cab driver from L.A. And we will keep it rolling along. By the way, we are getting there. We are getting there with Dr. John's challenge this evening. Not far to go, just a couple of contributions, and we will have met his challenge and been two-thirds of the way toward what we need to raise for this evening. PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the snail mail address at the website under the tab Contribute. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
No, it's really quite an interesting time, isn't it?
Isn't it, Kevin?
We have people who want to put short leashes, and think nothing of using that language other than to know that it's a dog whistle for everybody. And I'm amazed that Tom Hartman didn't say anything about it.
But I'm not. And then this is not a criticism. I know Tom's come in for some from members of the Horn family of late. This is not a criticism, but I'm not aware of Tom having any deep associations with Southern culture or that, you know what I'm saying? And if you don't have it, then you're speaking it as a you're speaking the language. It's a foreign language,
right?
And so you don't necessarily hear the dog whistles because, well, you've never spent just a hell of a lot of time around it. I mean, even the second part of bombing countries that he can't whose names he can't pronounce.
What was that supposed to be? I didn't get that. Well,
them shiftless, they ain't real smart.
Okay, well, went over my head.
And that's all over the Deep South that Barack Obama is an idiot. See, they're still all burned up that George Bush was one, so they're determined to find evidence that Barack Obama is too. And see, they got a better reason to think he is, because after all, well, you know, he's blah.
On Barack Obama's groggiest moment, walking from the bed to the refrigerator at night, would be George Bush's smartest day in office.
Well, no, right. I mean, how have there been any stories about Barack passing out and braining himself on the coffee table and choking to death on a pretzel?
No.
And having to have the family dog, run and bark to the first lady. Yeah, what's that? Is the president down a well, Lassie? No, we haven't had any of those incidents.
No, I tell you, the more I hear, the more, and I don't agree with the president on some of his policies, but the more these people do this, the more they push me into standing firmly behind the president.
Well, this is not the Barack Obama defense program.
No.
And never has been, and never will be, unless some night he magically transforms into FDR, which is A, not likely, and then I would still have issues, because I want more social good for the people of the United States than even, like I said last night. I want to talk, Kevin, not about minimum wages, but about living wages.
Exactly.
I want to talk about universal single-payer health care yesterday.
Yep.
I want to talk about what, not low interest loans for college students. I want to talk about students being able to go to college. Period.
Yeah.
Because the value of educating our youth is of greater value than any money we might have. There is no better spending of money. There is not a jet to be built, not a rocket to be constructed, not a missile to be conceptualized, not a submarine to be launched, Kevin, that is more important than, from a resource standpoint, and that's even kind of offensive, resources, human resources, there's nothing more important than our future.
Yep.
And so I'll still have problems with Barack Obama, because I want him to be better than he is.
I agree.
But the thing I was going to finish off saying with all of that is that there are some principles of fundamental fairness.
Yep.
That when you violate them, it just sets something off in me.
Exactly.
And for Grover Norquist to describe how he wants to put a leash on the only dark-skinned president this country has ever had, and knowing full well the filthy history of human bondage that forms damn near more than half, way more than half, of this nation's history.
Yep.
Hell no, I'm not going to sit still with that.
It didn't take me. You didn't say anything. I heard the clip without you saying anything to lead into it. It took me 1.5 seconds to understand what he meant by that. I tell you, you said something about the president not being, he's too kind a man or too patient, good, whatever word you want to use, to be vindictive. With people like that, they do reach a point where they've had enough. There's a tipping point, and they've had enough. And I'm waiting for that day. I'm waiting for that day when the president says, all right, that's it.
You may have a long, long wait, Kevin.
I may. But I'm like you. I can fantasize, and I hope. I want to see our president come out and say, just like what's his name on MSNBC, Reverend Al, just like Reverend Al did when the gang made the your boy remark. I want the president to come out and say, first of all, I'm not your boy, and second of all, I don't wear no chains. I want him to say, to be that forceful. Roosevelt.
You remember when the right wing had such an absolute hissy over Joe Biden in Virginia saying they want to put you back in chains?
Yep.
And then lo and behold, here's Grover Norquist wanting to put a leash on the president?
Exactly. I don't know. The right wing, I've learned, and I just take it to heart now, anything they say or do about somebody else is what they want to do.
And themselves, yes.
Yes, exactly. And if people would learn to follow that one simple rule, you can decode a lot of what the right-wing talking machine is. And by the way, while I'm thinking about that, who was the reporter that accidentally ran into somebody's fist?
I don't remember the dude's name, but he was a Fox guy.
I haven't heard the clip. Do you have the clip or anything of it?
Not at hand, no.
Yeah, I haven't heard the clip at all.
But the whole thing was just... It was just a mess, and it was one of those situations that was made for media because the right wing creepies decided that they knew that there were going to be protesters there from labor, and it was and most of the people involved were there to provoke a given response so that they could then say, look at the union thugs.
Exactly. Yeah, but you know what? That's only the beginning of it, because people are getting tired of taking it, and people are going to do what those people up in Michigan did. They're not going to sit back and take it, and there's going to be a certain class of people that will not sit back any longer without protesting in some way, shape, or form. And I don't condone the violence, but I understand it, you know. And if some reporter got in my face and started talking trash and stepped out of that reporter's role, can't blame the guy for, you know, doing what he did, because that reporter kind of was inviting it. And it's sad to say, but these people from Fox, they're nothing but a right-wing propaganda mouthpiece for Karl Rove and Grover Norquist, and most television stations. I don't think networks have to, but you have to prove you're serving the public interest. And I cannot see how Fox serves any public interest whatsoever other than to be a right-wing mouthpiece. And I just wish we could get them off the air some way. So, I don't watch them at all, but I've had family members, and a family member tell me a few weeks ago, well, Fox is the only station I watch because it's the only one that tells the truth. And I couldn't say anything. I mean...
Well, you can say something. Let me try to help with that a little bit, Kevin.
Well, no,
whenever anybody starts talking about truth, you know, yeah, that they're talking... When a right-winger talks about truth, what they're saying is, I watch them because they're the only network that appeals to and confirms my own pre-existing biases.
Exactly.
So when they talk about truth, what you know they're saying is that they don't deal in facts.
Right. But it was not something, it was more that I was speechless, Bob. It wasn't that I couldn't say anything to it. I was just speechless. Say what? This is a family member, you know? And they're talking about Fox telling the truth, and it's the only one that tells the truth. And one of my versions of truth, or how to get to the truth, is you've got to be listening to differing opinions. You've got to sort through the pros and cons of a subject. So I'm never going to listen to a network, any network, that just gives me one side of a news story. I want to get both sides of a story so I can understand what the facts are and come to what I believe, and I hate to say what the truth is, but what I believe to be the truth is, you know. I just, when somebody, it's like some of the Christian networks, oh, we're preaching the truth. Whose truth?
There you go. No, well, no, see, now that you've got that, you're all plugged in. You've got it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. I just wanted to call in and get some of this off my chest. I really enjoyed listening to you and Tracy talk there, and don't know how much more I can add to this, because I just feel like it's so much that we've endured over the past 12 years now, ever since Bush v. Gore, that I think we're reaching a tipping point where, people are going to have to make a decision. Are they going to stand with bigots like what we see on the right, or are they going to stand up for human rights and civil rights and workers' rights? And you're going to have to make that choice. And hopefully it won't happen in my lifetime, but I kind of got a feeling before it's all said and done, there's going to have to be some people that are going to have to make that choice under threat of prison, detention, whatever. Because these people on the right are relentless. That's the one thing, Bob. These people lost the election by how many points? And they're still acting like they won the election. How do you combat that other than doing what guys like
you have to beat them and beat them and beat them and beat them.
Exactly. Exactly. But you have to do it every day. You can't quit. You can't give in to it. And that's the hard part, because it wears on me. There's days I don't want to listen to anything. Because it just wears
on. We've got people in the Horn family, and it's not like I or you or we have driven them away. They've just looked and said, "Can't do it anymore."
Exactly.
I'm just gonna cave up and pay attention to stuff that I enjoy and live my life, because there's really nothing I can do. And I understand that.
I understand it, but that's kind of like a form of self-defeating thing, too, because if you just curl up into a box and close off everything to the world without standing up and adding your voice to the other voices like ours, then that's kind of just the same as standing with the other side. So, I may take a day off or two from listening to you or my lawyer or whatever, because I've just had enough of the right-wing BS, but I always want to be plugged in and tuned
in. That's the other thing, though. That's part of why I go and do outside and away from the microphone what I do, Kevin, and that's not me tooting my own horn. I get rejuvenated when I go, and I get renewed, and I get re-inspired when I get to go and see people of goodwill absolutely determined to not take the abuse.
Yep.
That's why the kind invitation that I had last week to go up to Wisconsin was so important. It wasn't important that I don't think I did anything particularly important. But it was personally important to me, because I kind of got cleaned up. I kind of got rid of some of the baggage. I got to get out on the ground and just be. And I don't want to go places that. I kind of got purified.
Right.
Because I saw people. Engaged in a struggle that reminds me of our own here, and they're not getting a check for it, and they're not raising money on anybody's backs. They're just trying to protect what's theirs.
Yep. Yep. And I think that's important.
And it's got a clean feeling to it.
Yeah.
And an inspiring feeling. And so I came back all lit up.
Yep. And I think maybe that's something I need to do in some way, shape, or form, because I've been kind of closed in with different things here. Not totally homebound, but, you know, I haven't been doing a whole lot of positive outside these four walls lately, so, you know, I need to do something positive like that, put my energy into some sort of civil service or whatever. You understand what I'm saying? Some sort of service to mankind other than just talking politics, maybe doing politics, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. And while I'm thinking about it, we talked about the Netroots Nation conference.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago.
Right.
Anybody that wants to start planning with that, you know, I'm willing to kind of lead on that. So I don't know how we want to do it, if people want to get in contact with me. Or
well, are you having any luck getting into the Skype chat on Friday night?
I'm hoping to this Friday. Last Friday, I had a microphone that I bought, went to plug it in, and somebody had cut the wire to the microphone. And, of course, being disabled, you know, being blind, I should say, couldn't get in the car and drive down the road and get another one. I hope to be in there tomorrow night, though.
Well, so, if you are, then maybe that's where some of that discussion can begin to take place. Kevin, it's awful good to hear from you, my friend.
Well, Bob, good to talk to you, and I wish you the best tomorrow. And, oh, by the way, I do want to wish Brother Albert congratulations on the new arrival.
Absolutely. Thank you for thank you. Yes. That's
anyway.
I thought it was just beautiful. We got to hear the little guy.
Yep. I thought it was a fitting story about the neighbor with the snow and the dog and the way he handled it. That was kind of priceless. So, you know,
yep.
That karma thing came around again. So
handle with care, man. Handle with care.
Exactly.
Kevin, have a good night.
Bye.
Calling from Colorado Springs, that's our buddy Kevin, and we will continue onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hey, my name is Josh. I've been listening to your podcast for a long period of time, and I'm in Wisconsin, and right now I'm traveling north on I-90 towards a job interview.
Awesome. Well, it's excellent to hear from you. I'm glad you could make the call.
And I don't know how long it's going to hold. I got a pretty good signal on my phone right now, but anyway, I'm going to talk a little bit about the dealings with Scott Walker here. I'm actually heading out of state for a job interview up in northern Minnesota, of all places.
You're going in the wrong direction.
I'm kidding.
It's all beautiful up there.
Yeah, it's the North Woods. There's old growth, pine forests up there, and all kinds of beautiful lakes. It's a really nice area. But they have just been gutting everything in Wisconsin under Scott Walker. The DNR has basically been turned into a joke. I posted a story on Daily Kos about the Scott Walker's assault on the environment. And you may want to look that up.
I will.
Wisconsin has had a great tradition of environmental activism and environmental pioneer movements. The ecological restoration movement actually started in Wisconsin in the 1930s under Aldo Leopold. And John Muir grew up in the state, some of the first plant community ecologists that really cataloged the natural communities of Wisconsin, or of in a most comprehensive way, were taught at the University of Wisconsin.
Well, there's a proud history and tradition there that just inspires the daylights out of me. All of what you just described, Josh, and the fact that so much of it is under assault from the Walker administration is, well, it's criminal to start with, but to see the fact that so many people are unwilling to just sit by and take it is an inspiration to the rest of the country, I think.
Well, I'm hoping eventually we can get rid of him. I was sorely disappointed that he wasn't recalled. That was a dark day.
Well, I understand, and I felt the same way. But I also think that I've heard a lot of people say that the recall was kind of a violation of people's sense of fairness up there. That, you know, he got 4 years, he's going to get 4 years, and hopefully at the end of 4 years, everybody will be ready. People will be ready to get rid of him, because I don't know if you could handle eight.
Which is funny. There are other cases in which everybody is okay with the recall. We had a state senator in 1996. His name was George P. Tack, and he was recalled, and there was the sole reason for recalling him is he flip flopped on a stadium tax vote in Milwaukee County, or actually he was in Racine County, and people were up in arms because they had their sales tax went up 0.25% to help pay for the Brewers new Brewers Stadium. And they were mad because he flip-flopped on the vote. He said, "Oh, I'm not going to vote for this." And then he flip-flopped. And it was basically a minor, fairly minor thing compared to what Scott Walker has perpetrated.
Well, in this latest election, you know, with Obama winning Wisconsin, but the legislature flipping, do I understand correctly that they eliminated straight ticket voting?
Yes, they did, but they also, the Republicans really managed to do a really grotesque example of gerrymandering the district. They managed to cram the Democratic voters into, you know, a tiny minority of, they really, you know, it was a real, real fiasco, and I would like to see somebody actually put a referendum up that would change the whole thing, that the reapportionments would be done by a nonpartisan commission. I think that would be the way to go on that. Other states have done that.
Yeah, that tends to yield a somewhat more unbiased and hopefully more fair result. But look, you've got an unbiased commission.
The Government Accountability Board.
Right, and naturally, Scott Walker now wants to make those political hacks.
Right. Well, he wants everything to be political hacks, everything to be cronyism, and we have an extremely corrupt and I call it the leak spittle media up here. It's very, I don't know, when you visited the state, I don't know if you were exposed to that at all, but the local, the media in the state is really bad and very right-wing biased.
Because they're probably owned that way, right?
Yes, and there's a lot of the big money interests in Wisconsin are very, very right-wing. And, what's funny is that even they write editorials against some of Walker's policies, but of course they're not going to have the courage to say, "Oh, we reoppose this re-election." Then the other thing is the recall. There's a specific purpose to the recall, and that's basically to get rid of somebody. It's another layer that allows the public to get rid of somebody. Not necessarily, but maybe because they lied, or not because they did something illegal, but because they lied, or because they violated trust. The media somehow managed to twist that around and portrayed as, oh, the recall should be about, they kind of conflated it with impeachment. If you understand what
I
mean.
Yeah, I do. Well, God almighty,
they even had, like, some silly signs that the pro-Walker people put up that said, recall Santa, I didn't get what I wanted for Christmas.
You know, I noticed when I was up in Ashland, we drove by a couple of stores that still had their I Stand With Scott Walker signs up, and I thought, my God. They were making their
Well, it's that's one of the reasons why I'm heading up to Minnesota for a job interview. The job market around here is terrible, and I'm not doing very well financially. You know, because of my field, I'm an ecologist, and there just isn't that much work in Wisconsin.
Oh no! Yours is one field that Scott Walker would like to eliminate altogether.
Right.
And a bunch of his Republican pals.
And it's just, it's instructive. You can actually look at the Minnesota DNR website and compare it to the Wisconsin DNR's website. And you'll see, like, the huge difference in there. Like, how everything is trying to be really science-based and fair-handed and even-handed and stuff. It's just an example. Before Scott Walker came in, the Wisconsin DNR used to have really great, information pages on invasive non-native plants and animal species with really great descriptions, how to identify with good photos and things like that. And they got rid of that, and they dumbed it down. And that's just one example. I mean, that's just the website, but it's just a part of that whole culture.
But... I guess my question, Josh, is how much, because Minnesota has, you know, real problems. For instance, in mining, mesothelioma clusters near its own taconite mines, political corruption associated with it.
Oh yeah, there is. There's definitely a problem with that. I mean, I'm fully aware of that.
I was told one story where the people of Minnesota are actually going to pay to move a road that has gotten in the way over time of one of the taconite mines in northern Minnesota, because there was a deal struck with the mining company 30, 40 years ago that if they ever needed to expand the mine to where the road was, the people of Minnesota would pay to move it. So now, you know, they've called the chip in on that contractual provision, and you just
mine seem to have enjoy some of the greatest, like, protections from government of any type of industrial enterprise. I mean, think of, like, we saw the 1872 mining law on a federal level, and that thing is so antiquated, so out of date, and so out of touch with. And that's still on the board.
Well, I tell you what, though, as frustrating as it must be for you, Josh, just please know from somebody from the outside looking in that is an incredibly special place up there. Like I said, every time I've gotten near it, I've just been, and maybe it's because I tend to run around with the more progressive element of the state. But mm-hmm. I've just been impressed to no end.
Oh, there's some extreme real beauty up there. I do know, do have some friends up in the Superior area, and I am in touch with a lot of people in the progressive community in the state myself.
I'd love to have time to do some real serious hiking in the woods and stuff up where I was, and by the same token, I'd like to have time to just, you know, camp out and have some wandering around time in places like Madison, and you know, we were in River Falls for a couple of days, and that was just magnificent. Like I said, most of the experience I've had with Wisconsin has been relatively small town Wisconsin, And that's mm-hmm. that's where, you know, that's where I find some, well, and I don't want to come across as anti anything, but it seems like if a state has fairly healthy small towns, it's kind of like if you've got small healthy small streams, you've got your larger streams have a lot better chance, you know what I mean?
Right. Oh, I know that.
And
yeah, there's some real view, you know, actually the northern part of the state, I know you saw the stand with Walker things, but most of the northern, like, tip of the state, is fairly progressive. And, you know, in, like, the Madison area, Milwaukee area, I actually live in a fairly reactionary part of the state. I live near the far southeast corner. I'm like in one of the three reddest counties in the state. And it's, you know, Milwaukee, western and southwestern suburbs of Milwaukee and the county that kind of runs, like, some of the deepest red counties in the entire U.S. I mean, if they weren't rich, you know, everybody wasn't comfortably wealthy, you'd think from the politics you're in Mississippi or something.
That's scary. That's just scary.
Walker, I read up on, you know, Waukesha County. I'm in Walworth County, which is just to the southwest. But there's the progressive movement is starting to pick up in my county, too. And, you know, there's people around. And I think people are beginning to realize, you know, it's a nice area. We've got a lot of nice lakes around here. People are, oh, we should find the Pinokies. I rejoin them, okay. Well, then, how would you feel if somebody blew the top off the ridge around next to Lake Geneva and all of your expensive lake houses went away?
Oh, no, that'd be terrible.
I'm just saying that.
I'm sure that gets a dandy response.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can't have that. Not at all, no.
No, that's kind of the... But there's people are realizing, you know, in the way the lake is degrading, and, you know, I'm talking people into doing more environmentally sound things along the shoreline, you know, replanting native plant communities and things like that. People are getting aware, and I've got some clientele in the area that are interested in making the environment better, or local environment. So it's not all, you know, gloom and doom where I live.
No, there's a lot left and a lot worth saving where you are, in fact. And, you know, I keep going back to that thing I said again and again and again. And that is that, you know, the reason there's been such a right-wing assault on a place like Wisconsin is because there's really no fun in making Alabama weirder.
Anyway, but just all of the things that, I call Scott Walker a fossil fool governor because right before he came into office, there were all kinds of things that were getting ready to go. We were going to put there are companies that are ready to put in about close to $2.5 billion worth of wind projects to the state.
Look at what got lost in the, in his rejection of high-speed light rail. You know, it wasn't just the construction jobs that would build the rail system. It was the company that was going to manufacture the cars there.
Oh, and you know what? They actually built the cars, and now and they're going to use them on the existing segment of the rail, which from Milwaukee to Chicago, they were going to upgrade that. And they were going to use the cars. The company built the cars in Milwaukee. They finished them. And then they were going to send them, you know, on their way to use. And they built then the state said, oh, no, we don't want them anymore. They finished, they completed, they built them. We don't want them anymore. Now the rail company is suing the state for, I think it was like $70 million to get paid for them.
Oh, I hope they do. I mean,
so it's craziness, and the whole thing is the guy is going to realize he's going to have his the Walker regime is going to realize they've cut their own their whole justification for canceling is that it was going to cost the state several million dollars a year to run it. By the time they're all done with all the stuff they're going to have to pay for because they rejected it, it's going to cost them probably 50 times that. You know, they could have run the thing for 50 years. And it was, the thing that's terrible is that the federal government was going to pay for all of it. All, you know, lock, stock, and barrel. And that included the improvements on the existing segment.
Right, but remember, if the federal government did it, that meant it would be communism.
Oh, yeah, but the thing is, and I tried to, like, tell people, the thing is, okay, you're maybe a Wisconsin resident, but you're paying federal income tax. You want some value for those tax dollars.
Well, right, Josh. I mean, in light of the amount of money that goes to Alabama Stan and Mississippi Stan and so forth, where they get a lot more than they pay out, a state like Wisconsin probably pays out more than it brings back, and it'd be kind of nice to get some of it.
A lot more. And that was a chance to... And what's crazy is that everything was mobilized. They were getting rid of breaking ground, getting ready to track improvements. They had... the state had to pay for all these new railroad rails that they were going to put in. They put them in storage. You know what happens if it gets delivered and it gets put into storage? They have to pay like a dunnage fee for storing the supplies. So the state was had to pay for that.
What you're describing is the classic model of Republican right wing conservative fiscal conservativeness. Yeah, where it sounds good on the front end, we're not going to spend them federal dollars, but then on the back end it turns out to be just plain stupid.
It just boils down to one thing: image over substance. Look at what they do, not what they say.
Right, and I think in the case of the rail issue, it also boils down to the death grip that the Koch brothers have up there. And, of course, they're not in rail, they're in oil.
Right. If you read my piece that I wrote for Daily Kos on the Scott Waller, it talks all about this. And
Josh, tell people how to find that.
If you just Google Scott Walker's assault on the environment, that will be the first item on the top of the list on a Google search.
Okay, Scott Walker's assault on the environment and Daily Kos, and it should pop right up.
Yeah, well, you don't even need to mention Daily Kos, just Scott Walker's assault on the environment. That will be the first entry. It's old. It's a few months old. There's a few new developments since then. I haven't updated it, but I basically put it together right before the recall election.
Well, that's awesome. I will go and read it. Josh, I'm glad you called, and I hope you will call again.
Yes, I probably will.
All right.
You have yourself a good evening, and I'm not going to be able to hear the rest of your show because I'm driving, and all I get is terrestrial radio.
Well, I'll put you back on hold if you want me to.
Okay.
All right. Well, again, it's good to hear from you. I hope we'll hear from you again. I'll go have a read of that. And thank you very much for taking the time to call. And, Josh, good luck with the job interview.
All right. Thank you very much. It's with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, an ecologist position.
Awesome. Well, good luck. I hope we'll hear good news from you.
All right. Well, thank you, Bob, and you have yourself a good evening.
Thanks. Take care.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
New caller. Longtime podcast listener. That's Josh calling from the road. Let's see who we got here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Jim. How about you?
I'll tell you, my heartfelt feelings go out to your last caller who is on the road somewhere in either Wisconsin or Minnesota, because I have, in my own experience, having flown from D.C. at like 16:30, landing in La Crosse, having to be in a meeting at either Vogtfield, Fort McCoy, or wherever, and luckily not in pursuit of a job, but just in pursuit of the completion of a mission. And that's kind of rough to be on the road this time of the night.
Well, it is. It is indeed. Especially, well, I get nervous this time of year anywhere that water freezes, because I live in dread of so-called black ice.
Well, you've never lived. You've been in Fort McCoy in, like, December or whatever, and it's pretty rough up there. I mean, we're talking about people who have to plug their cars in at night to keep the engines warm, stuff like that. Things that the Russians did in World War II, you know?
Yeah.
It is kind of rough, and my heart goes out to that guy. It really does.
Well, I hope everything works out well for him.
Well, I do, too, because job interviews are the hardest job in the world.
Oh, aren't they? Aren't they just?
Oh, God. Well, you're trying to say yourself to another person, particularly after a certain age, in this day and time, it is, well, it's almost quixotic.
Well, you know the part of it I always hated the most, and it seemed like the most insincere part of it, was when they get her, well, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Oh, yeah.
I hated that question above and beyond all others, Jim.
Luckily, in my experience, basically, I submitted forms, was called for telephonic interviews, and then for personal interviews. No questions were asked like that, you know, like that by the military. Basically, they were just, you know, very down to earth, cut and dried, that type thing. Can you accomplish this? Can you accomplish that? And I was spared that. I guess I wouldn't be spared it now. But those questions like that, where do you see yourself in 5 years? You know, 5 years? Well, we could be on the other side of the moon. Who knows?
Right. I mean, it for certain among us, it almost triggers an irresistible, I don't know, what do we have, Jim? Smart-ass gene?
Well, what I'm trying to say is this. The Office of Personnel Management used to be such a device in which you were winnowed out from so many other applicants, taken in the top three, and based on your knowledges, skills, and abilities.
Right.
And weren't asked questions like that. The military don't ask questions like that because they don't know where they're going to be in the next 5 years, because God knows they could be deployed somewhere else on the other side of the world.
Ice Station Zebra.
You got it. Absolutely. And there's so much lacking in truth to these personnel hiring practices now, because they're so discretionary. Just absolutely discretionary, and basically what you know in the back of your mind is the guy who is sitting behind the other side of the desk has already selected someone who he knows or whatever.
I will never forget, and this is my favorite interview story, Jim. I was interviewing with a guy named Michael McDonald. And you know, I mean, you know who the singer was with the Doobies and famous backup singer and everything. And
yeah.
I couldn't get it out of my head that I was interviewing with my, because there's just, sometimes there's just things that just tickle me. My family has a very strange sense of humor, and we nurture it carefully.
I'm sure they do.
And so I was sitting there across from Michael McDonald. And he asked me that dumbass question, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I looked at him and I said, well, Mr. McDonald, it's difficult to say because we've got such a long way to go. Such a long way to go. And it just tickled the hell out of me. I think he probably thought I was nuts. Luckily, there wasn't a lot riding on this thing. But what I was doing, do you remember Christopher Cross?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the song Ride Like the Wind?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Well, Michael McDonald sings the backup on that. And when Christopher Cross says, and we've got such a long way to go, you got Michael McDonald in the background singing, such a long way to go. And like I said, it just tickled me. And I went out and I told one of my best friends about it. And he said, no, you did not. I said, oh, yes, I did.
Well, let me tell you something. I've got a mini story to tell you about a friend of mine who went for a job interview in South Carolina in the lower coast in Charleston or whatever. and the interviewer asked him, what person in the world would you like to be the most? And I said, Jerry, what did you tell him? Well, I know what to tell him. I told him Jesus.
That's not a bad... Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
I said, what did he say? And you know how these people who are in personnel, because a half of them have been booted up to personnel or human resource management because they can't do the job at the lower level and they can't fire their ass, you know?
Right. Demoted upwards.
Exactly. You know, basically just taken up there and placed in very sensitive positions because they couldn't do the job for which they were initially hired. But that's another story for another time. But, you know, I just sent you an email, and I just, you know, it was about, you know, basically what we've been talking about tonight is truth, right?
Of one shade or another. It's the shadings that get us in trouble.
Well, as I said, it was basically a paraphrase of one of the Cavalier poets after the restoration of Charles II. I think his name was Suckling. And he was talking about love. Love is not love which alters, but an alteration finds.
I've read that.
And truth, like love, is not altered when an alteration finds.
I think there's a lot of truth in that, Jim. Indeed.
I think there's 100% truth in that.
The problem, you know, the problem, I guess, is always with the manipulation of it. Look at Michelle Bachmann wanting people to read the Quran because it's just like Mein Kampf. Now she is offering that, and I offer this.
That stupid bitch couldn't even get through Mein Kampf. Hell, Bob, I couldn't get through Mein Kampf when I tried to read it because it was one of the most poorly written things.
Well, and I was going to get to that. You know, the Germans, the people who were born speaking the language, tell me that it is a very tormented usage, and I'm not even talking about subject matter. I'm talking grammatically.
Horrid, absolutely horrid. I mean, the guy Hitler dictated or. To Hessler, a Remy typewriter. That was his first book. And he also dictated it to somebody else, maybe Hess, on a second book that was never published. On a portable Remington Rand typewriter. 1920s vintage. And it is so torrid and filled with contradictions and just all these fascinations with syphilis and worldview as envisioned by a budding dictator and lots of just crazy stuff. But yet, you know, he made lots of money off of it because if you didn't buy it, your ass was in.
You got dead.
Absolutely.
You talk about number one with a bullet.
I mean, he built his mountain house on the proceeds from that book. You know, through the, you know, the proceeds of his publisher. I've forgotten the guy's name. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is that this thing with President Obama, keeping him on a leash.
Okay, so, I mean, you speak the language to, I mean, that is offensive in the extreme, right?
To me it is. I mean, basically what we are envisioning, in my opinion, and it's not worth much, I realize that, is an oncoming constitutional crisis, as I sent to you in an email earlier, because this is the foundation for the removal of this president. They couldn't get him out one way by the electoral process, and now they're going to try it later on.
Well, you know, it's interesting you would bring that up because I've got a story sitting here. You've heard me talk about, and we've talked about from time to time, this absolute. You've got to guzzle Mercury to be. I mean, he's not crazy as a Mad Hatter. He's crazier than the Mad Hatter. I mean, it's like he washes his hands in Mercury. He's so nuts. Steve King from Iowa.
Oh Lord.
Well, he has declared that Benghazi is worse than Watergate, and Iran-Contra together 10 times over.
And that is absolute bullshit. I mean, this ambassador or this lady who was there, who the United Nations ambassador, who today just said, you know, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
I don't need to deal with this stuff. I'll say it to the UN. I don't blame her.
Right.
I mean, she was basically the recipient of the intelligence provided.
Well, what is it? What, wait. I mean, because when I read this news that she had pulled her name from contention, what does it say, Jim? You would rather stay at the UN and deal with the Iranian ambassador than sit down in front of a bunch of right-wing United States senators.
Well, the thing about it is, in my opinion, this type of vetting or appointment should not be political. And that's exactly what it is. These people are pulling at any straw they possibly can to discredit the judgment of our commander-in-chief. That's what it says to me.
Right, but when you use phrases like put a leash on him...
Well, that's just... Yeah.
No, I mean, it tells you that they are not willing, even though he beat their asses like barred mules twice.
They can't get over it, Bob. They can't get over it, and they're just drawing at every straw they possibly can.
I mean, it's like, I don't know, it's like the white people in America who rooted for Max Schmeling.
I know. That's a good movie, by the way, Joe and Max. That's a great film. But, you know, what we have here is a basically rewrite of Advise and Consent by Alan Drury.
Yeah. I'll work, yeah.
Can you work with that?
Yeah, and some.
I beg your pardon?
I said, and then some, yes.
Okay. Well, you know, these presidential appointments as Secretary of State or whatever, I know they have to be approved with the advice and consent of the Senate. That's true. But when you look at the content of the present day Senate, I'm just wondering, you know, how valid that is. And that's the reason I pointed out earlier.
Well, but they have at least the Republicans, because remember, the Democrats, when there was a whole host of Republican appointees, and we're talking about crazy people, judicial appointees. Remember these during the Bush administration?
Oh, God,
and they pulled together the Gang of 13, and some key Democrats agreed to roll over and let George scratch their bellies in return for not blocking any appointments. You know, that's advise and consent taken to its weakest form, whereas the Republicans in the Senate today take advise and consent and simply retranslate it, Jim, to advise and dissent.
Well, Bob, the whole thing is another Munich. And listen, you're at the end of an hour. I'm going to let you go, but I just thought I would express those opinions, and I hope you have a good trip whenever you're going, and good luck, and fair sailing.
Clear skies, yes.
Blue skies, whatever, but anyway, I'm out of here, so you take care.
All right, thanks, Jim. Take care. Bye now.
Out of here.
Our good buddy Jim to close the evening. Thanks for all the wonderful conversation tonight. Sorry about missing tomorrow night. I'd really like to have a little Friday on the front porch going on, but I will be back Monday, and hopefully you will be as well. Thanks to everybody who helped us meet tonight's fundraising goal and meet Dr. John's challenge. It is profoundly appreciated, and, you know, it's how this continues to stay on the air. Thank you. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, our all-volunteer staff, Lottie, Sparky, Betsy, Jean, Susan, John, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Nothing happens here without it passing through the servers of the White Rose Society. Ben Birch has been at this for 10 years and never sent a bill. Thank you. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. Go there, learn how to be a part of ending
the human rights crisis in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Here comes Rick Smith on the horn.